Welcome to the Enterprise Mobility Roundup podcast, brought to you by Blue Fletch. We discuss technology topics related to Android and workforce devices and how they intersect with business and mobility.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Blue Fletch Enterprise Mobility Roundup podcast. I'm Brett Cooper. Today, I'm hanging out with Richard Makerson, and we are going to talk about why retail leads in technology and technology innovation. So, Richard, a lot of the background for this came out of a discussion you and I had regarding, it just seems like the retailers across the globe, or even in the U.S. specifically, move a lot faster than manufacturing, warehouse, T&L, a lot of the other companies. And we were trying to figure out what's the driving factors that cause that to happen. And when we talk about innovation, I think the areas we talked about, the first one was like mobile devices, like the mobile device ecosystem, which I don't know if you like want to talk about like what that looks like for employees or users.
Yeah. So, you know, early on, probably around a decade ago, retailers had to come to the realization that customers were walking in with more powerful devices, access to better information, and they were studied up. And so how can, you know, they train up or level up their store associates to meet that need? In the early 2000s, everyone wanted to invest in their websites and put more information out there. And, you know, the cause behind that is that, you know, now customers have better tooling, better devices. And so I can walk in and have, you know, intimate product knowledge about the specific product. But not only that, is it available in the store? Where else is it available? And I mean, I'm sure you've seen it where you walked into a store, you've asked a store associate a question, and they've put down their employee device and pulled out their actual smartphone look up the answer.
It's a little less common now. It is definitely early days. It's super common though. They pull out an iPhone or a same. I still get it at some retailers. They pull out their personal device and do that. And even me, like at times I'll go to like a retailer and I'll have the app and employee will come up and ask me if I need help. I'm like, nope, got the app.
Yeah, that's early days. And, it was embarrassing for those big retailers. Now, the other piece of it is, if I'm a retailer and I have brick and mortar, you have to deal with showrooming. So being able to walk in, and now these tools are powerful enough to where I can scan something on the shelf and get multiple buying options. I could buy it online right there from a competitor in a retail environment if the pricing it's cheaper, although they do have price matching, but it just depends. But I think consumers having increasingly more powerful devices and information driven by that early web development in the mid to late 2000s drove a lot of that innovation in retail.
Yeah, and I want to add on to that, you know, with the example of a retailer working on a working with a customer that comes in, you don't want to be embarrassed. Like you want to have like the experience, you want to sell that, you want to close that deal. No, there might be somebody out there, but most of the employees want to do a good job. They want to be awesome. They want to have like success at what they're doing. So I think the enabling them with the tools is really, really important.
Exactly.
The second thing, this sort of tails onto the first one, just the differences in shopping demographics. And I feel like a lot of this is driven, and we'll get to the Amazon point here in a second, but a lot of this is driven by a younger buying demographic and how they shop and how they expect to shop, whether it's brick and mortar, whether it's online, how those two come together.
Yeah. Younger shoppers want a better experience. They expect for that store associate or someone in that store to be a subject matter expert because they have, taking the great lengths of actually putting on clothes and getting in the vehicle and going to a store.
Put where, Crocs on.
You know, that was table stakes, back in the day. I bet a lot of these younger shoppers, don't understand or don't remember or don't know a Circuit City or Service Merchandise, right? Or maybe even a Toys R Us.
Is this where I order and that they have a conveyor belt and it brings out? So is that Service Merchandise?
Yeah,
is that the one?
Oh. That was Service Merchandise.
so bad.
So like their expectations are greatly different. If they come into your store, they have spent, you know, a decent amount of time beforehand. And this is almost a last resort. So
what do we call that in sales? Intent, high intent,
high intent,
high intent. They're in your store. They have a high intent, and yeah, don't disappoint them when they're there. The third one,
last point. And I think this butts up with the expectation piece, as well as just e-commerce, right? So, you know, we have websites, but now you have a proliferation of smaller retailers that show up that are web only, that can take orders online. I hate to shout him out, but he's actually doing something very interesting. Kanye West with the Yeezy brand, being able to film a Super Bowl commercial on his iPhone, have a website that can take orders, and they're effectively pre-orders. And every iteration now is learning from the previous release. And so, you know, it's that type of disruption that, you know, retailers didn't have to deal with, you know, previously. Maybe you had, you know, Zapatos and that was free returns. Yeah. That was the big thing.
I was a little disappointed though. To your point, like, was the thing you turned me on to, Kachava? You can buy it online, but you can't buy it at Whole Foods. I went to Whole Foods. I could buy it on Amazon, but I can't buy it at Whole Foods. And I was like, man, I was super disappointed. I was like, why didn't I sell this here? But yeah, there's an expectation from consumers. If I can get it here, I should be able to get it faster at brick and mortar, which, you know, I think that alludes to, you have to have the technology that allows you to enable that from a supply chain standpoint, from a inventory accuracy standpoint. You got to know what's in the store, and even integrating back into things like Google, where you search for a product and your Foot Locker shows up. You know, they have, you know, your Jordan's size 12. It's at this Foot Locker that's down the street from you.
And to be fair to the retailers, it's easier to innovate on the web and e-commerce versus having like a mobility strategy where I have a certain amount of devices over a certain amount of stores. Like, the complexity of that is so much higher. Although, I mean, it's not like it's a walk in the park for the website or e-commerce, but the mobility strategy, is complex. It is a big investment, and, you know, you can't screw it up.
You have a bunch of website guys with pitchforks outside your house next week.
It's fine.
It's really hard. Talking about websites, this was the, I think I alluded to this earlier, Amazon, right? The Amazon effect, or everything store, whatever you want to call it, the effect of Amazon pushing retailers. What's your thoughts around that?
I actually think that piggybacks onto my previous example, right? Like, Amazon started out as a bookstore, online bookstore. And, the more they iterated, the more they innovated, they would add more products and more product categories. And then they disrupted retail by having Amazon Prime and the free deliveries and free returns. And so for them, they didn't have a mobile app. They didn't have brick and mortar. They didn't have these store associates that they needed to innovate with. They did have distribution and warehousing that they had to figure out and buy airplanes and trucks and warehouses and all that stuff. But from, you know, pushing something on the website and making it available to billions of people or hundreds of millions of people, however you want to count it, available, that's it. And so if I'm a retailer, especially a specialty retailer, now they're sitting around thinking about, well, how can I innovate? Well, let's sell diapers, and we'll brand it. What is their brand? It's,
I don't know. It just comes to the house.
No, it's like Amazon Basic or Amazon.
Amazon
something.
Basics. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, everything's an Amazon Basic. So, like, all the things that we don't necessarily enjoy buying, but you want to get a deal on it, it's just Amazon Basic thing. Diapers,
batteries. They just copy Kirkland.
Yes.
Kirkland did a good job. Costco did a really good job with that. I looked at what people bought the most and then went generic on it.
But they really forced you to innovate or die. And the fact that all they had was this website that needed to innovate with and didn't have all the baggage of what would come from a legacy, traditional brick and mortar retailer, you know, allow them to, you know, change the game.
Yeah. Well, to your point, there's definitely a lot involved there with the aircraft and trucks, and they've definitely grown and they've done a spectacular job of innovating, trying new things. And, you know, they're similar to Google. They'll try things. If it doesn't work, they'll throw away. The Amazon stores, they talk about that, you know, put 1,000 people, have them watch the cameras, pretend it's AI.
True. And then even the website, although they innovate by having products and features, how much of the look and feel has changed?
Not much.
Not much.
Yeah.
And if they want to change something in production, you're talking like seconds.
Yeah. So, you know, Jeff Bezos talks about the margins and his 25-year company. This is a thing that's, it's not specific to just Amazon. Thin margins are not specifically Amazon. I've talked to a lot of retailers, especially in grocery, where, you know, I think one of the executives told me, you know, for every dollar, we make pennies, and it's very, very important that we're efficient. And I think that's another reason that we see a lot of efficiency and people trying new things on the technology side. I mean, what's your experience? What have you seen around that?
My experience for the ones that do it well, and from my experience for like how I would consult like a retailer would be, it's a long game, and it's very similar to racing. I'm a big F1 fan. You know, grams count. Like every little detail matters, and eventually you add up enough of those and you look back and say, okay, we actually made a lot of change. And so I think, you know, a lot of these retailers have relied on their brand, they've relied on the prestige that they've had in the marketplace, and they thought, well, either we can wait for the silver bullet or we can wait for X company to release something, versus getting this culture of experimentation, proof of concept, iteration, and trying things and getting those small wins that when you look back add up to pretty big wins. So, I mean, you know, margins are thin in retail, depending on retail, but it is a long game and you can't cheat the process.
Yeah, that's a big one. I know like that we were talking about this last week at there's a conference with Google and Zebra, and they mentioned, you know, margins. If you have a 10% change in inventory accuracy, it'll change your margin, your profit margin by 1 or 2%, which is, you know, if you have a 3% or 5% profit margin, adding 2% to that is huge. So applying technology to make you more efficient definitely makes a huge difference in those scenarios.
Efficient, and then accuracy. I'd add accuracy to that as well.
The last thing that we talked about when we were going back and forth on this idea was really around the why retailers have some advantages of other companies, whether it's logistics, P&L, warehouse, manufacturing. The cycles of you make a change, you see a result, are a lot faster in a retailer.
Yeah.
What's maybe you got some examples of this, how this works and what you've seen?
No, that feedback loop is really, really small. I remember the days, like the 2012, 2013, where you had like the explosion of like Groupon and the hyper local, hyper micro deals, you know, cause based on data, and even Wendy's is doing this where they'll change the price of their menu based upon, traffic coming through their store.
And surge pricing.
Yeah. Surge pricing.
Yeah, so, I don't know if that's going to hold up. I think there was a lot of like backlash in that,
but they're trying, and I commend them for that. So like in the retail environment, you know, your customers will give you feedback really quickly. You can monitor that. You can look at, you know, just traffic patterns, buying patterns. You know, we introduced this thing. Did it move the needle? Yes or no. If it did, do we double down? Do we go down further? If it didn't, do we try something else? You know, looking at Yelp, Google, Reddit, you know, Reddit, it's a good place for, you know, to get insight into how your operations are going. Because a lot of times, you know, your associates have that information and, you know, might not share it, might be too busy to share it, but, you know.
We used to have a Dropbox that said suggestions. Now you just go to Reddit and find out what your employees aren't happy about. Now it's a good life, a good hack for retailers. If you're looking to get insight from employees or customers, go check out the subreddit for your company.
Yeah. But that feedback loop is really, really tight. You could see, you know, these marketing and sales, motions move really quickly in real time, because you don't have to wait an entire year to understand that this sale will make a difference. You could release something on a Thursday or Friday and, you know that over the weekend or when you come back Monday, you know, did it work or did it not work?
Yeah. And we've done, and you've talked about this in the past, especially around POCs or proof of concepts. If you run a proof of concept, be able to measure it in the back end. Measurability of proof of concepts is huge. And I think for us, it's how do you do a POC as quickly and efficiently as possible without spending a lot of money, and then understanding how that moves the needle. And I remember one we did that was putting different types of kiosks into different store formats, and using that to understand what products you get lift on. So if you put a kiosk in the garden section, do you actually get lift on certain garden products you're advertising or pushing on that kiosk? So I think a lot of those things, you know, if you have the metrics coming off your POS, you know, your sales and your point of sales devices, and then you compare that to the actual POCs you're doing, I think that helps you drive a lot of that innovation and experience.
Yeah. And then you could also leverage existing technologies to help provide additional data points or metadata on, you know, did something work or not? You know, like you talked about putting the kiosk in. You could look at the interactions of the kiosk, but you could also look at the security cameras and actually understand how folks are interacting or not interacting, where clicks or swipes may not tell you.
Got it. So in summary, I think the things you talked through, number one was just that customer employee experience. So the interaction, how do you improve the ability for your employees to serve the customer and meet the expectations of customers that are coming to your store?
Yep.
I think the second one is that was really big was just understanding your margins, understanding how different technology moves the needles, you know, try POCs, try those things quickly. You know, in the third one, you know, get quick results on the changes. So measure those impacts of new technology in the business. And I think a lot of these things, you can take them from retail and try to figure out how to proxy them into, you know, T&L or manufacturing. There might be a little bit more difficult to test these things out. Maybe there's more talking to people or getting feedback different ways, but really think about what retailers do and how they're moving and try to model that with your businesses.
And you can't get frustrated. It's a culture change. It's transformational. So you have to try different things. I mean, status quo is status quo. And, you know, in today's world, when you have folks looking to disrupt different industries, different verticals, making a name for themselves, having a culture that's okay, trying different things and not relying on the things that we've done for the last 10, 15, 20, sometimes 50 plus years is not going to be the same, especially as the pace of technology and our expectations change so much.
Awesome. So in summary, as Richard said, don't get frustrated.
Do not get frustrated.
Do not get frustrated. Thank you very much for listening and following along today. If you have follow-up questions, feel free to reach out to us at info@bluefletch.com. And then if you enjoyed this, please feel free to share it with folks, your friends, and like or subscribe. Hit the buttons. I think it'll be down here or down here. I can't remember which way, but you'll see it somewhere if you're following along the video. But appreciate it. And thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Enterprise Mobility Roundup podcast. If you enjoyed the discussion, please take a few moments to rate us. If you would like to listen to future episodes, please subscribe. To learn more about mobility topics or submit any questions, visit us at bluefletch.com.